Pop Spotting 175.
Friday, December 2nd, 2011.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I am Ryan.
It's Feedback Friday, and this week we were happy to learn that many of you love musicals and shared many of our picks. Of course, there are a lot of shows we need to catch up on, too.
Absolutely, but let's hear a few voicemail calls.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, it's Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11, calling in to share my love of musicals. I'm so glad you guys decided to do this show. I loved musicals growing up because we went to them, local productions as a kid, and I got to see some neat productions that way, community theater. And then I got into them again in kind of junior high because of DCI, our Drum Corps International. I was a big marching band guy, and some of the first musicals that I heard outside those local productions were DCI productions. And the first time I saw West Side Story, I started watching it because I thought it was going to be a Drum Corps production. So they have a near and dear place in my heart. I got to see some more in college, and I'll give you my quick top few. First of all, my number one has got to be Les Mis. I have never seen a Broadway production, but I've seen, you know, the anniversary, you know, production that they ran on PBS. But then I got to help out with a local student production this past spring, summer, and it was outstanding. The young men and women did an awesome job, and those songs just stick in your head. Beautiful story, moving story, just a great one. I, like Ryan, love South Pacific. I've got the DVD and love the music. So that's up there as well, probably number two. I really enjoyed Oklahoma growing up. I like it. I actually have it was kind of a mix. They did the, you know, theater production, and then they recorded it in a movie theater. The version with, from Australia with Hugh Jackman as Curly. And Hugh Jackman is also going to be in the musical production with, coming up of Les Mis. And it is a musical movie that they're doing. So that version is neat. I really enjoy how they adapted the stage to the screen and doing it that way. So that was neat. I really enjoyed that one. That's Oklahoma. And enjoyed West Side Story too. But I think one I haven't seen in a stage production that I would love to see would be Wicked. Got introduced to the music thanks to Glee and the original cast members that they've had there, and bought the CD and really enjoyed it. I would really love to see it on stage sometime. So those are just a couple. I've seen quite a few, but thanks for doing this, guys. I really enjoyed it. Bye.
Thanks for your call, Jeff. Always good to hear from you. And now extra points for being a marching band geek. I come from a family of marching band geeks. My brother in particular was a lead clarinet. My mother was a booster for Kalani High School and Kaimuki High School, so we spent a lot of time at marching band festivals, so I can totally see that. And great musical picks as well. Oklahoma is not one that I know well, but I know it's a big one. It was the first major one by Rodgers and Hammerstein. And Wicked, our daughter Kate knows that one, or at least listens to it, I think.
I enjoy the music to Wicked. I didn't feel really comfortable commenting on it or even putting it in my top five because I have not personally seen it, but I do enjoy the music, and I think any musical starring Kristen Chenoweth is awesome.
Right. Well, I know the story. I mean, it's like a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, and it's from the point of view of the witches, the Wicked Witch and the Good Witch, and, you know, it talks about the oppressed, you know, living in the oppression of that evil wizard. So I will have to check out Wicked. And he mentions that new movie that we were curious about, The Les Mis, that's going to have Hugh Jackman in it. P.F. Fulton on Twitter also noted, as Jeff did, that it will be a musical. And as we just recently mentioned, Hugh Jackman can sing and dance.
So can Russell Crowe. I forgot about this, but Russell Crowe actually had a band and released a couple of albums. So I'm really interested to see what they can do.
We're looking forward to that one. Let's move on to our next call.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Cheryl in North Delta, British Columbia. That was an awesome conversation on musicals. I really enjoyed it. I've been fortunate to see many and have always loved them. Two standouts for me are, one, recently dragging my non-theater-going husband to Wicked on a recent New York City visit and being relieved that he actually loved it. And I loved it as well. It was a really awesome. That was, I think, the only time I've ever been to a musical on Broadway itself. So just that whole experience of being in that theater was amazing. The other standout for myself was the very first professional musical I ever went to in Los Angeles. I was 12 years old. It was Fiddler on the Roof. And, I was 12. I went with my dad. And I so strongly related to the third daughter in this musical who marries outside of her religion and is even shunned by her family. And that ended up being a foreshadowing of my own life in future years.
Thanks for your call, Cheryl. Always good to hear from you and great to hear your voice. Well, I guess in the musical, we don't know how things turn out for that particular daughter. But, in your case, we met you and your husband when you came out here. We had lunch at Nico's and then you spent all that time on the Big Island. So I'm pretty confident that in your musical, at least, we got that happy ending.
Yeah, it was great to see Cheryl.
Absolutely.
Another vote for Wicked. I think it's great that she got to see it on Broadway and also Fiddler on the Roof. I really love Sunrise Sunset.
Yeah, some great music there. Another classic for sure. Let's move on to our third call from Stephanie.
Hey, Jen and Ryan. This is Stephanie from the TV Rewind Podcast at tvrewindpodcast.com. And I wanted to send some feedback to tell you that you guys are doing a great job. I've been listening for several months now because of some recommendations from a couple friends on Twitter. And just wanted to say that I really loved your podcast about musicals. I'm a huge fan as well, especially of the Weber musical. So I can appreciate Ryan loving that as well. Here are my top five. Five is Phantom of the Opera. Four, West Side Story. Three is Rent. Two is Wicked. And one is Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. When I was in junior high, I saw Joseph for the first time and was very excited to see it because I knew the Bible story very well, obviously, and was excited that it was a Weber musical, and I was already loving it then when I was younger. So I got this CD, listened to it repeatedly over and over and over until I knew every single word. And to this day, I still know every single word, even being 30 years old. So when I saw it for the first time when I was in junior high, I knew it so well that I just sat there in my seat and sang along with them. And it was really awesome. And I still do that to this day, even if it's not always out loud. But you guys are doing a great job. Love everything you're doing. I will keep listening and keep up the great work and have a great day. Bye.
Mahalo for your call, Stephanie. Always good to hear from another TV podcaster. And thanks for sharing your top five. I can totally relate to the Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat part. Again, I think for a lot of people, it's their first musical. It's performable in schools. It's a fun exploration. What about Rent? Have you seen Rent?
I've only seen the movie, and I was not nuts about it. I mostly saw it because of Jesse L. Martin, who played Tom Collins, and I would like to see someday maybe a production of it in a musical setting with Jesse L. Martin.
Well, I'd like to see that for sure as well. And another vote for Wicked. Let's get on to more musical feedback, starting with Beth K on Facebook. She writes, "Loved this episode. I too used to listen nonstop to my parents' Broadway albums when I was 9 and 10 and 11 and 12. Did you know that in the 2008 South Pacific revival you mentioned, Matthew Morrison, that's Will Schuster from Glee, played Lieutenant Cable? Back when I swooned over the show as a teenager, I loved Joe Cable. Now, as a woman of the established age, and that's approximately 2 years older than Jen, if I judge by the albums she got at age 9, I swoon over The Frenchman."
I did not know Matthew Morrison was in it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Maybe that might be something that would talk our daughter into, you know, deigning to check out a musical. Thanks, Beth.
Al Ross on Facebook writes, "I'm going to throw in a cheat. Beauty and the Beast is my favorite Broadway play. It just played in theaters because it was animated. Staged and scored like a play, it's a masterpiece of Disney style at its best. Yes, I know Beauty and the Beast was staged after the fact, but I never saw it that way. I would throw in Sweeney Todd as another great piece of theater. Otherwise, my list of five would have included West Side Story, Jesus Christ Superstar, and Evita.
Well, certainly Beauty and the Beast is a great pick. I mean, we did think that we might have expanded our list to include just general musicals, movie musicals, and, you know, that one, Beauty and the Beast, was part of the golden age of Disney musicals. You had Alan Menken and Howard Ashman. They did Aladdin. They did the Little Mermaid. So some really great music, some memorable melodies for sure. That's a great pick. And Sweeney Todd. You know, I forgot that it was a musical. I kind of overlooked it because I know it mostly as the movie.
I liked the movie. I thought Johnny Depp sounded great singing the songs, and then I do really love the music.
Yeah, one of our good friends, Beth, I think that's one of her favorite musicals and favorite movies of all time. So great pick, some overlap in Al's list. Pete in the UK writes, "Love the episode, so glad that West Side Story and Phantom of the Opera got some love. They're my top two. But there's also Singin' in the Rain, a great film that I was lucky enough to see on stage. It was just as good, if not better, watching it live. Calamity Jane is another. Have you checked out Love Never Dies? That's the Phantom of the Opera sequel. Honestly, the story's not great there, but there's some really good music, at least. As for small screen musicals, hope you check out Dr. Horrible, if you haven't already, and the Buffy musical, and Reefer Madness with Kristen Bell. That was a lot of fun, too. So, wow, some pretty neat things, and not all that I know. Now, Calamity Jane, I know that the character is played by Robin Weigert on Deadwood, but I don't know anything about the musical for that one.
No, I didn't know there was a musical, and I wasn't aware that there was a sequel to Phantom of the Opera, either.
Yeah, you know, I had to go and look it up, because I remembered it vaguely, and for whatever reason, maybe as a Weber fan, I just blocked it out, that maybe I thought that it was a unauthorized attempt of extending it, but no, it was actually a Weber enterprise, and it wasn't very well received. But if Pete says that at least the music is pretty good, I'm going to check that one out. But big thumbs up for Dr. Horrible. We had all of our kids pretty much know Dr. Horrible by heart.
Oh yeah, backwards and forwards. I listened to it all the time. I wish I had considered it. I was really thinking of a different frame of reference when I was considering musicals, and I completely forgot about it.
Well, if you don't know Dr. Horrible, you have to check it out. But it is a landmark of geek culture. I think if you're geeky enough to listen to a podcast, you know all about Dr. Horrible and Captain Hammer.
Do you know what the hammer is?
Now, let's move on to a quick comment from Colleen.
She writes, "I admit that I hate South Pacific, but I love Miss Saigon, Les Mis, and Evita. I also love Into the Woods."
Well, gosh, hate Miss South Pacific, but okay, I can, you know, again, because part of it was filmed on Hawaii, and because it was my mom's favorite musical, that's a piece of my childhood. I have to love that one. But Into the Woods, this is an interesting one. Are you familiar with it?
Our friend Jamie is a really big fan.
Oh, that's right, in Portland. I've not actually seen it, but I like the concept of it. It's the Grimm's fairy tales, but all sort of mashed together. It is a Sondheim musical, and I think I know why Colleen liked it, because, at least according to Wikipedia, it premiered in San Diego
before it
went over to Broadway in 1987. But it had a lot of great performers, Bernadette Peters, Joanna Gleason, and when it came out, it won lots of Tony Awards, even though it was going right up against Phantom of the Opera.
Interesting.
So we're going to have to check that one out. Let's change the subject over to television with another call.
Ryan and Jen, what's happening? This is Axel, former guest on Pop Spotting. Hey, you know what? I'm actually on my way to work, like I said, when I listen to you every day, and I'm listening to you talk about Fringe. And I'm so glad that you're talking about it, because I agree 100% with what you're saying. I love Fringe. I mean, I love this show. But how you can make the main arc more complicated and yet revert back to a Monster of the Week procedural style of storytelling is beyond me. I think what we're seeing here is an internal struggle, is a problem with the studio/network that is interfering with what the producers probably want the show to be, which is heavily serialized. I find it really strange. Also, they moved the show to Friday, which is a death slot, and yet they try to make it more procedural. I just think it's really losing its way. You know, the only way you can properly explain something complicated is to take the time to explain it. So throwing all of this crazy stuff at us at this point, and then when we're running around, albeit well-written Monster of the Week, as Ryan stated, is just beyond me. And I really think it's unfortunate, and we'll probably find out more about it when the season's over. And it does look like, I mean, based on the ratings, this is probably the last season of the show. I hope that with the second half of the season, they abandon this and just tell us the story. Because really, we haven't seen the real Olivia, the real Walter, the real Astrid that we came up watching the last seasons since last year. And plus, they're doing nothing with the alternate universe since the first episode. That's really interesting. So, yeah, just a fringe lover's lament. Thanks for the show. Y'all rock. And I love the idea of Hawaii, because I want to know how you get from one island to the other, how long it takes, and how often people actually do it. That's all. Bye-bye.
Hey, Axel, always good to hear from you, and a great Hawaii question. We're going to save that for our Hawaii Q&A. Mm-hmm. We're still looking for some questions. Anything you want to know about Hawaii, just ask. We've got a few, but we'd certainly like a few more, and the answer to your question does not include canoes. But, well, let's just say you're not alone in the Fringe Lover's Lament. We got a similar sentiment from our friend David Swinney on the blog. He writes, "While I'm not as negative on Fringe Season 4 so far as some prominent television bloggers, and I'm talking about you, Alan Sepinwall and Maureen Ryan, I do see a big problem here. What we've been watching is not the Olivia, Walter, Astrid, Philip, and for that matter, Nina that we've come to know over the past three seasons. Only Peter is the same. And if he is successful in finding his way back to his original timeline, the one that contains the characters we love, then everything that we are watching happen now is moot. So I can't find myself getting too wound up, wondering what is up with Nina Sharp and her behavior in this timeline, nor her relationship with Olivia and her sister. On the other hand of the coin, if Peter is not successful in getting back, how would you feel about the time that we all spent getting invested in the show and its characters, particularly if this turns out to be the last season of the show? That said, I'm very excited about the upcoming return to the alternate universe. I'm all in for the ride. Let's see where the producers take us."
I agree. I'm all in, no matter what they do.
Yeah, and I'm not really frustrated. I am a little concerned, a little confused, but even though this is Monster of the Week and all of that, I'm enjoying them, and it's not like I've been in this show for 3 years, so I have to see it through. I'm enjoying what we're getting, even though I'm starting to get a headache thinking ahead. We do have sort of a different interpretation, though, from Faith in Tennessee.
She writes, "From what you two were discussing on the Fringe front, it seems like you agree with Peter in thinking that he's in yet another universe. I don't think so. I think Peter has convinced himself that he's in another universe, because thinking that where he is the correct universe would mean that he has no one. As we saw at the end of the last season's finale, the Observers fixed the universe by removing Peter, but Peter is too special to completely go away. I think the culmination of this season will be Peter's slow realization that he's in the correct universe. Sorry to go all conspiracy on you. I tend to do that with J.J. Abrams shows."
Well, J.J. Abrams does have that effect on people. That's an interesting take, that he's where he's supposed to be, that he's not going to end up having to go somewhere else or where he belongs. But I still think that the concerns that both Axel and David are bringing up are true, because in this timeline, maybe he's not with Olivia and he's going to help Olivia hook up with Lincoln. But that still doesn't feel right. I mean, it's still not going to be the world that we know, that we love. It is a challenge. I mean, I can't think how they could possibly get out of it.
Well, maybe Peter's realization that he is in the right universe can be kind of like season 6 of Lost, where everybody wakes up in the other world and realizes where they used to be. And I think that could be a direction that they go in.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if everybody loved that side of season 6 of Lost, so that'd be a controversial way to go for sure. But I'm totally, you know, looking for the big twist. I'm totally looking to have my mind blown, for them to do something big. I'm not going to put it past them just yet. I should mention that David did note also separately that we are kind of talking about this mid-season finale as another monster of the week, that we had to wait for the previews for the next episode to see all the mythology and the alternate universe that we've been missing, as Axel noted. But that's because Fringe was preempted a couple of times thanks to baseball, and because they weren't going to air episodes past a certain date, that pushed that mythology episode to January 13th. So that probably could have been a really big mid-season finale. But
it would have been great.
Yeah, but we're going to have to wait until then to see it. Finally today, some thoughts on The Muppets.
Martha in Mexico writes on Facebook, "Just saw The Muppets and came back home to listen to your podcast. I love the movie so much. It brought back a lot of memories. I must say that the chicken singing Forget You and the human version of Walter were my favorite laugh out loud moments. The only bad thing is that I saw the movie in Spanish. It isn't showing in English here in Mexico. Can't wait to watch it in English. I'm sure the musical numbers are way better. So glad they're back. It would be great if the TV show came back as well."
Yeah, you know, I've been watching a lot of the clips on YouTube. There was a great blog post about, 10 clips that show that The Muppet Show was for adults, not for kids. Mm-hmm. And there's some really good stuff there. I can totally see them bringing the show back with actual celebrity guests and actors and other folks coming on. But I can't imagine what watching this movie would be like in, Spanish. That must be a surreal experience. So I don't know if you have to wait for DVD or if it'll come out, but thanks for sharing your thoughts. Teresa in Michigan wrote on Facebook, "I'm so happy to hear that you guys found the Muppet movie satisfying. I've been looking forward to it ever since it was first announced. But are there any scary or disturbing moments where I should cover the eyes of my 4- and 5-year-old? They are pretty sensitive. Toy Story 3 was a little much for them."
I can't think of anything. I mean, Toy Story 3 was a bit much for even me, and I'm a grown-up. So I can say pretty definitively that there's really nothing disturbing.
No, I mean, you've got the bad guy, but he just says maniacal laugh. I mean, he's one of those cartoonish parodies of a bad guy. You mean you laugh at the guy. So I think your kids are going to enjoy it. I mean, even the ending of the film kind of reminded me of our discussion of Cars 2, where there's sort of a great celebration and a small child might not even really know what that means. Did they win? Did they not win? It doesn't matter. Everybody's happy. So no reservations. I think your 4- and 5-year-old will love The Muppets.
Bill in New Jersey writes, "I'm a little too old to have enjoyed the original Muppet Show. And as a father of a young boy, I am pretty sick of children's movies. But somehow you've made me excited about seeing the Muppet movie."
I love that. And I really think you should see it, especially, one parent to another. I totally hear what you're saying about being sick of what children's movies pretty much amount to these days. Mm-hmm. I cringe when our kids accidentally catch a commercial for a modern kids film because I definitely don't want to see it. But this movie is perfect because it has that complete and utter lack of being clever or ironic or modern or too cool for school. You've got to check it out. Jimmy in Georgia also agrees. He writes, "My wife and I went to see the movie Wednesday night, and we loved it. We bought the soundtrack and have been listening to it in the car over the last few days. We don't have kids. We just like it." So, a great pick for kids and kids at heart, for adults. You should certainly check it out. And we didn't mention on our show, but there is a great cover album called The Green Album, of course, and it has all of these modern artists doing classic Muppet songs. So, the Muppet theme song is done by OK Go. Weezer does Rainbow Connection. The Fray does Mana Mana. You've got My Morning Jacket. Amy Lee, she's from
She's the lead singer of Evanescence.
That's right. So she does Halfway Down the Stairs. I mean, so some really well-known Muppet songs, but some lesser-known ones. You've got Andrew Bird, Rachel Yamagata. You've got to check it out. You can, of course, get the MP3. Apparently, it's selling so well that it's taking like 4 weeks to deliver the actual CD from Amazon. And also, if you have an iPhone or an iPad, there's a new version of the Tap Tap Revolution game, where you just sort of tap the points in the rhythm of the music, and there's a Muppet version of it.
Awesome.
And it also comes with some of the songs from the film. So many, many thumbs up for The Muppets. We love your take on movies, on music, on television, and of course on musicals. If you've got additional thoughts, we want to hear them. Don't hold back. Although we're off next week, you can use that time to catch up and gather your thoughts and send in some of your brilliant ideas for the podcast.
You can leave a voicemail at 815-310-0808. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net, or you can comment on our blog at popspotting.net.
You can also post your thoughts on the Pop Spotting Popspotting page on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting, where other listeners can see your comments and ideas and start a conversation there.
You can also connect with us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Now, if you love podcasts as much as we do, you know it's sometimes hard to keep up with them all, and syncing files to and from a gadget can be a pain. Fortunately, there's Stitcher Smart Radio. It's a free app for iPhone, Android, and other smartphones that lets you easily stream the latest episodes of your favorite podcasts, including PopSpotting, right to your phone.
We'll be back after our week break with more pop talk. For now, we want to thank Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song.
And thanks to you all for listening to our show. For PopSpotting, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jen.
Aloha.